Joining me in studio now for a closer look at the equity space is Robert Schuurt, and of course he's from the Robert Group. Thanks so much for joining us today, Devin Schuurt, I should say. And I'm reading straight off auto cue there, which was very misleading. Devin, just looking at the markets play, I mean, little to no global or local data coming out today. Markets again seeming to be dominated by corporate earnings report, and you know that in the driving seat as opposed to geopolitical risk. Yes. Events at this stage, or what are you making of the state of play?
Yes, yeah, it seems as long as Mr. Trump's quiet on his Twitter account, the geopolitical risk subsides, doesn't it? So we really focused on the US earnings season in particular and some updates locally as well. I think from a macro perspective, the two updates out yesterday were particularly significant. The inflation number coming in lower than expected in retail sales. That saw a rally in our government bonds, strength coming into the rand, and that fueled a lot of the open of the session today. But yeah, we did taper off a bit, I think just following the US markets
low. Yeah. World commodities and resources stocks rocketing on this talk of oil potentially hitting $100 a barrel. I mean, we're still at about, what, the $74 mark as we last saw it. What are you making of that talking and the kind of impetus it has led the resources sector, not so much the South African resources scene today, but broadly speaking?
Yeah, so I think oil's got a few tailwinds at the moment. Obviously, the geopolitical premier on that is definitely there. There's been supply disruptions as well. Inventories are falling. So we are seeing that oil price tick up higher. You know, a company that released an update today, Sasol, will definitely benefit from that. So, yeah, I think with the commodity complex as a whole, you know, we look at the bulletin production updates, things are not looking bad. You know, a little bit high, a little bit low in some sections, but overall we're seeing the demand coming through, and as a result, these companies are benefiting.
Absolutely. Well, amidst it all, we've had the banks and retailers continuing to rally on what has been a firmer rand. Also, as you say, encouraging economic data prints filtering through locally. We've had that IMF report, very encouraging too. Let's hone in on two specific retailers, Clicks and Pick and Pay. Yes. Clicks out with a stellar set of numbers today.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, you know, I often look at Clicks and I think how many stores is too much. You know, they're almost on 500 stores now, and I do think they're probably close to saturation, but they're really getting the business model to work well for them, making great margin, particularly in health and beauty in the set of results. But it's not a cheap stock. You know, it's trading on a 38 times multiple, so it's priced for perfection. And while we like the model, you know, there's a lot of concern in paying a valuation of that much. That being said, dividend up strongly, loyalty program continuing to grow. My one question on the results was there was no mention of the Musica holding.
Absolutely.
We don't know what's happening with that.
Well, I spoke to David Neal a little earlier today, and I said, you know, why not just let go of Musica completely? Yeah. I mean, it wasn't even good enough to feature on the financial release today. And he highlighted, well, the main reason is it is still profitable. Mm. So surprisingly, they're making sales, and it's more so your headsets, I guess, that they're selling in quite a big way.
Yeah, that's right. Equipment there. It would have been nice for it to get a mention at least.
Absolutely,
but, yeah.
Absolutely. Let's take a look at Pick and Pay. Overall impressions there, especially given the fact that, yes, we are looking at rising consumer confidence levels coming through, but you know, it's still being a very constrained market. Consumers still very conscious of where they're spending their buck and how.
Definitely. So a couple things on the Pick and Pay release. I think, as you mentioned in your intro, they've been very good at containing the price inflation. So, I mean, their suppliers and their buyers, I should say, have obviously been negotiating pretty hard on behalf of the consumers. They may have absorbed some of the VAT increase as well on the consumer's behalf. So that's great. So they've also done some real cost-cutting measures, voluntary severance packages that cost them 250 million rand, but that is a once-off. So, you know, to Richard Brasher's point, they are starting to look leaner and meaner. They're trying to centralize that distribution even more now to reduce the duplication of costs in that supply chain model. So, yeah, there's a lot of good things. I mean, the group struggled for a while, and I get the feeling that they're starting to turn the corner now. They're starting to get a bit of confidence behind them. But But yeah, I think the macro environment will take a while to really filter into the consumer pocket and ultimately into the results.
Oh, that low selling price inflation was a standout not only for Pick n Pay but Clicks as well. I mean, how much longer do you see them being able to withstand that? Because or push that through? Because at the moment we are looking at a lower inflationary environment, but some of those risks start to emerge now on the horizon, where we've got increases in petrol prices coming to the fore, along with the increase in VAT.
So I think we're probably near the bottom of the inflation cycle. So I agree with you. I think we are probably going to see those tick up. I think these groups will try to do everything to contain it, but at some stage it will get passed on to the consumer. That can have a margin compression impact. So yeah, I don't think take these results in isolation as the way things will go, but yeah, a nice set of numbers for them.
Absolutely. What's your stock pick at the moment?
So I really like the updates out of Mediclinic yesterday. Yes. I think they're starting to get their Middle East operations right. They've spent a lot of money there. The South African operations look good. Switzerland needs a bit of work with all the regulatory red tape. But the stock has now come to attractive levels, in our opinion.
Were you amongst the buyers yesterday? Because it was the top performing stock on the top 40 index. Having said that, down today 0.9%.
Yeah, not involved yet, but it's one we like.
What are you making of current valuations?
So look, we think it's attractive. You know, we like the group. We did the question some of the acquisitions. I think they have managed to adjust those somewhat to be significantly earnings accretive. So yeah, we're interested at these levels.
Let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Devin. We'll hit pause on the conversation for now. Devin Shute is with the Robert Group. President Cyril Ramaphosa is closer to meeting his target of attracting 1.2 trillion rand in investment after bagging 850 million rand from the UK. Of course, there's still a long way to go, but the investment campaign aims to position South Africa as an investment destination with significant unrealized potential. But with net foreign fixed investment falling to its worst level since the 1970s and 80s during former President Jacob Zuma's term, is South Africa's investment case strong enough for foreign investment? Joining me on the line now, George Glenos, who's chief economist at ETM Analytics, still with us in studio as well, Devin Shute from the Robert Group. George, thanks so much for joining us this evening. So we had a chart by economist Mike Schüssler illustrating a very frightening picture. Net foreign fixed income as a percentage of GDP falling to its worst level than during the disinvestment campaign of the 1970s and 80s during the Jacob Zuma years. And it speaks volumes. How much reprieve do you see South Africa having clawed back since December?
Hi, Alicia, and evening to your listeners and your viewers. I think it's a stark number. What Mike's done there is he's looked at the net figure. So it's not just a case of how much went into the country, but how much is divested from South Africa as well. So it's just as much how many rands left the country, local companies investing abroad, which I guess is tacit to proof that local companies don't view a tremendous future in South Africa, or they wouldn't have done so. So there was a lot of damage done. Over the past 10 years, we've seen those numbers deteriorate steadily. And quite clearly, it was evident in the way that GDP growth unfolded. It was evident in the way that, in fact, South Africa's economy more generally became more dependent on government to try and produce any form of growth, and dependent on the likes of the Reserve Bank cutting interest rates to produce some credit-fueled consumption. Yeah. So none of that was more than a quick fix. And so as a result of that, we're sitting with this dearth of foreign investment, and I think the government has its work cut out for it. So I welcome that he's gone on this roadshow and he's trying to attract this 1.2 trillion rands worth of capital. Let's see if it arrives.
Yeah.
You've got to build an investment case, and South Africa's investment case at this point is still extremely tentative.
In fact, I was speaking to Iraj Abedian of Pan African Investments earlier this week, and he wasn't quite convinced that South Africa is an easy sell just yet, with a lot of policy uncertainty still plaguing a host of sectors, George, and saying that while it is a good idea, South Africa may well be putting the cart before the horse on this one. Do you agree?
Yes, I definitely would agree. So, you know, if you're going to sink billions into an economy, as a CEO of a business, you're going to be accountable to your shareholders, and you're going to be accountable to try and derive the greatest return possible for the amount of funds that you've deployed. If you make a bad decision, that's your job on the line, and it's a whole bunch of shareholders that are aggrieved at the fact that you took a bad strategic decision. So it's never going to be as simple as just Ramaphosa on a charm offensive to try and attract as much as possible. And just because he's a hell of a nice guy, very agreeable, speaks beautifully, and comes from business, that it's going to be enough.
Yeah.
I suspect that we're going to need to see proof, and that proof is going to come in the form of significant progress made in right-sizing SOEs, in right-sizing cabinets, in making sure that government reforms work in such a way as to make it more efficient. And then if we see proof in all of that, we may regain that confidence of foreigners such that they put that kind of money back into this economy.
George, I've got Devin Shute with me in studio, and he's got a question for you. So I'm going to bring him into the conversation at this point. Devin?
Hey George, just maybe you could just highlight for us a little bit. The IMF also mentioning, you know, this lack of structural reform, and you speaking about, you know, the policy certainty that's needed. I think the potential issue is that we have such uncoordinated and unsynchronized policy. We've got the NDP effectively gathering dust. You know, how do we kind of pull all these policies together to really get the business and the public sector and just the general people of South Africa behind it, in a way where we're not going to wait another 5 years for, you know, another policy to be promulgated and gather dust?
Devin, that's a very astute question, and it's not an easy one to necessarily answer. So I think a lot of people misconstrue the NDP as a policy document. Mm. It's not that. It's actually more of an objective document. It gives us an objective to reach. It's not so clear insofar as the details concerned on how that's going to be achieved. And in fact, if one has a look at what's happened in the course of the past 10 years and how the different IPAP from the Department of Trade and Industries unfolded, it's not entirely clear that they are consistent with the likes of the NDP. The NDP also, by its very nature, is extremely broad. It covers a number of sectors, and I think at too high a level. So, you know, when one looks at something like that, it's very difficult to understand or differentiate exactly how that policy is going to drive the kind of investment and growth returns that you would want to see. I still think that we have got the high-level picture right, but we don't know how to implement it on the ground. And so, I'm in the camp that believes that it's going to be at least another 5 years before we get our ducks in a row. And it's going to require a tremendous amount of consistent reforming over a prolonged period of time with a different ideology and mindset from government before we achieve it.
George, I'm going to squeeze one in, and very, very quickly. I mean, we've seen the rand against the greenback rising, and that giving us a sense of the risk premium foreign investors attached to South Africa arising out of the country's political uncertainty. Where do you see that risk premium now sitting?
So it's undoubtedly fallen, Alicia, and I would say that it has the potential to fall a little bit further. We're still constructive on rand. We have been since 2016. We haven't abandoned that yet, so we still think levels of 11 are possible, which means it's good news for inflation and potentially that interest rates remain lower for longer. So from that perspective, I think the Ramaphosa presidency has been a breath of fresh air and has invigorated things. But like I said, from a structural perspective, still a lot of work to do. And I for one, am still very skeptical as to whether this roadshow has done enough.
Absolutely. Well, George, thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. George Glenhouse is, of course, Chief Economist at ETM Analytics. Devin, a pleasure having you in studio as well. Devin Shute from the Robert Group. Well, we're heading into a break right now, but when we come back, we turn our attention to international news-making headlines today with Bronwyn and the Deutsche Welle team standing by in Frankfurt. Welcome back. Well, German leaders want the Trump administration to exempt the nation's companies from tough new U.S. sanctions on Russia. Let's cross to Bronwyn now, who has the Deutsche Welle team standing by at the Frankfurt Stock Exchange for more on that and other news making headlines today. Bronwyn.
Thanks, Alicia. Well, German leaders are in the U.S. and tricky negotiations lie ahead. The finance minister is pushing for special treatment when it comes to America's sanctions on Russia. But is the Trump administration likely to budge? Let's find out and cross to the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, where Daniel Koop from Deutsche Welle is standing by. Daniel, thanks so much for your time today. So I had a look, and trade between Russia and Germany rose to around 54 billion euros last year. So it makes sense that the country would be looking for leniency, as the move by the U.S. is likely to have a huge impact. But how successful do you think negotiations on this front are going to be?
Yeah, this is a very big topic here on the trading floor. As you just mentioned, those trading with Russia is extremely important for Germany, also for the European Union. This is certainly going to be one topic that will be also addressed during this meeting with our new finance minister. He's very new in office. He was the former mayor of the city of Hamburg, now meeting with the vice president of the United States, Pence. But let me tell you, the main reason why he is actually in the United States are those terrors that could be also happening for the entire Eurozone. We have to remember that Europe is only exempt from those tariffs until May 1st. It's still not clear what the United States wants in return for a permanent exemption of those tariffs. So this is certainly going to be one of the big topics between Olaf Scholz and Mr. Pence taking place in Washington.
Well, it seems to be a day of a lot of talking, because we also have German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Emmanuel Macron meeting as well. What's likely to be on the agenda there?
Yeah, exactly. They have lots to talk. We saw them a little bit earlier holding a press conference. And yes, there are a couple of issues that are on the table. First, of course, also the Syria conflict, a big topic that will be discussed between them as well. Then remember that Emmanuel Macron has this big vision of Europe. He wants a own fund for countries that could be suffering in the future in Europe, mostly countries in Southern Europe. He's also always thinking about appointing an own finance minister for the Eurozone. Well, in the past, Germany has been a little bit reluctant when it comes to all those plans. Many here feel that Germany and France, you know, could be countries in the future giving credit and credit again to countries here in the Eurozone with financial problems. Then another big topic is going to be with them Opel, another car maker here in Germany who has been in a crisis for a long time. Remember, Opel was bought last year from PSA, from France. PSA has been giving Opel quite some homework. They need to be profitable again until 2020. This seems to be a very difficult task. Now we are hearing that more than 1,000 jobs here in Germany at Opel factories could be at risk. So this is certainly also a topic that's going to be discussed, because the French government is holding 15% of PSA in France.
And before we end off, a quick check-in on company news. Procter & Gamble is set to acquire Merck's consumer health business. What does a move like this mean for Merck?
Yes, there are going to be big changes at the company to make it simply pretty much everything where you don't need an official prescription from a doctor, like aspirin or a vitamin C pill. All this will be sold to Procter & Gamble for an amount of 3.4 billion euros. The price, investors are a little bit disappointed, is well below the 4 billion euros that analysts actually had valued. There are some 3,300 workers worldwide who will be affected by the sale, 300 of them here in Germany. The proceeds from the sale will be used to pay off debts which increased dramatically in 2015 when Merck purchased the U.S. chemical and biotech company Sigma Aldrich for $13 billion. The deal is accepted to be sealed at the end of 2018, and of course also in this case we'll have to be waiting for the approval of regulators.
While we wait for that approval, we'll have to see how that deal develops. But for now, let's leave it there. Daniel Koop is from Deutsche Welle. And that's a wrap of your global news headlines. Alicia, it's back to you.
Thanks, Bronwyn. And that's all we have time for this half hour. After the break, you get some technical share analysis on Talking Technicals with independent analyst Frans de Klerk. And I'll see you back at 7 o'clock with your news. We also chat to Armand Kersten from the Dutch Investors Association, unpacking why it's gunning for banks like Absa over Steinhoff. Also chatting to Click CEO David Neal. He'll be taking us through the retailer's interim results. So I'll see you then.